That's a good-looking man. What did you say, Ira? The facts are the facts. I mean, come on, Bruce. You're better than that. Don't they call him the human joystick? I think he's trying to goad the goat.
Ladies and gentlemen, so excited to be here with the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the custodian of Canton, the king of Pasco County, the baron of Big Storm Beer, and Mr. Bill Curry Ford. He's Uncle Ira, Ira Kaufman on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee D. Kemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. And the birthday boy is back from his beach getaway. And we have got a ton of Buck stuff to fire off and dive into. Ira, how are you?
I'm so relaxed. I'm almost mellow. 3 days on the beach. Beautiful. No Cosmo. Cosmo's first trip to the boarding school. We picked him up today. The handler brought him out. My wife said, how was he? He's a little hyper, Mrs. Kaufman. He's a little hyper. And they see dogs of all sorts in there. So Cosmo pushed this guy's buttons for 3 days. God bless him. I don't know what the hell they're paying him, but he earned it. He's in the living room right now. He's snoring. He's so exhausted. Who knows what he was doing for 3 days. But I know what I was doing for 3 days. Enjoying myself on Treasure Island. Great place. Tremendous dinner Monday night. Snapper's Grill opposite the Trade Winds right on Gulf Boulevard. Fantastic place. Tuesday night, I picked this French bistro. C-minus, gentlemen. C-minus. Wee-wee. No good. Got the pate.
Wee-wee, that's yes-yes, isn't it?
Whatever it is, I'm saying no-no. C-minus. And then yesterday, we drove down to Paso Grill, went to a different beach. Very, very relaxing. I want to thank all our listeners, all our readers for the warm birthday greetings. And there were a lot of them. So I do appreciate it. Snuck a column in, talked to Carl Peterson for about 45 minutes yesterday because he is pushing Dick Vermeil for the Hall of Fame as a coach. And, of course, those two work together in Philadelphia and again with Kansas City. It's been a very interesting week. Now, next week, guys, I got to tell you, don't bother calling me Tuesday. Don't knock on my door. Don't invite me to Big Storm. I'm unavailable. There's going to be a Zoom call. Might take 8 hours, might take 10, but we're going to pick the one senior candidate and the one coach that is going into Canton. There's only 5 guys on this committee. I'm one of them. And we're picking both the coach and the senior. I got a lot of work to do, and we will see what happens, gentlemen. And no, Bruce Arians' name is not on that list. First of all, you got to be retired. Otherwise, we ain't voting you. And a couple of times, Parcells, we thought Parcells was going to be up for coach, and people didn't want to vote for him because they thought he wasn't finished coaching. And you know what? They were right. He then took another job. And he finally got in when he was good and done. But we never trusted Parcells that he wasn't going to get back into the game. And we didn't want to put him in Canton. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's the head coach of, you know, the Arizona Cardinals. Tuesday's a big day next week, gentlemen. I'm going to have to work around it with podcasts and columns. But it's well worth it because it's that important.
Please don't put Don Coryell in there.
I don't believe Coryell's going to make it. There's only 5 or 6 names on the list. There's only 5 or 6.
For the sake of common football knowledge, don't put him in there.
You know what? I would be more prone to put him in as a contributor. As a contributor. Because
yeah.
I think, as you know, as an innovator, you give him high marks. But I think the leading guys are Mike Holmgren, who has a heck of a tree. Steve, he's got a better tree than you got out in front of your condo over there, Steve. You know, and I guess Gruden's part of it, and Andy Reid, and a whole bunch more. You got Vermeil, who turned around 3 different franchises, 3 of them, including your beloved St. Louis Rams, Lee.
No, I never was a Rams fan.
Well, you did live in St. Louis for a while.
Yeah, they came about 10, 12 years after I left.
Ira, you know who gets my vote? He's not quite a senior yet, but he's getting closer. I vote for Sean Sullivan, general manager of Bill Curry Ford. This podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, and everyone looking for a truck or an SUV or a crossover or a used car, whatever it might be, needs to contact Sean Sullivan our good friend. You can find him at BillCurryFord.com. You can find him at the Bill Curry Ford showroom. He's going to guide you and answer your questions and not be a jerk and give you the...
Steve, I've heard you pontificate about Bill Curry Ford, the dealership that's a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry. Let me take over here. I have personal experience with Sean Sullivan, the general manager. We're driving the 2020 Escape cherry red leather seats, bun warmers. It's one hell of a vehicle, reliable, a smooth ride. Can't wait to jump in it. You know, I got my own car, and my wife and I switch off and on, and we're fighting over the Escape. We both want to drive it. Huge trunk space, beautiful for our beach chairs. Anything else you got that's a little bulky? And Steve, I'm the guy that's going to endorse Sean Sullivan and BillCurryFord.com. We don't need your nonsense anymore. I'm taking over the endorsement business when it comes to Bill Curry. How do you like that? And I'm putting two cases of Brumosa from Big Storm Brewery right in my trunk.
Family style service that you get from a family owned dealership that's been there for 60 years. And of course, the deals are fantastic at Bill Curry Ford. You're going to get an Ira Kaufman discount, nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles, tremendous financing, in-house financing. They have the Curry Cares. You can get your auto insurance, your home insurance right there. I use them for my insurance. They save me a bundle of money. It's just an unbelievable dealership, and we're all customers there, but it's all about the service. If you really want help and you really want honesty, reach out to Sean Sullivan, Bill Curry Ford.
BillCurryFord.com.
And Sage, we have got a lot to talk about these Buccaneers. So much has gone on since our last podcast. I would encourage everyone to subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, wherever. It'll pop you a free alert that there's a new podcast if you didn't see it at JoeBucksFan.com or you didn't get there yet. So go ahead and do that. Feel free to leave a review on Ira. But Sage, Bruce Arians has been talking. Ronald Jones has been talking. Jason Light was on national radio as well. We got a lot to hit on, Sage. But I want to fire this at you first because you seem to be a little obsessed with this. And it's also something that affects a lot of fans who had planned to go to New Orleans. No fans in New Orleans for opening day. A lot of Bucs fans were planning to head up there. And it seems like we're going to have fans at Bucs games. But you asked Bruce Arians about this. And what are your overall thoughts as we sit here a month from opening day?
Well, I thought he was going to say we look forward to having fans in our stands because it will give us a competitive advantage. And instead, he's talking about maybe there isn't much difference between fans and artificial crowd noise. I mean, come on, Bruce, you're better than that. 20,000 of your rabid supporters in the building, and believe me, there's not going to be a lot of Carolina fans. There's not. That team doesn't travel well. This is not the Chicago Bears or the New York Giants coming in for the home opener, which would be September 20th. It's the denizens of Charlotte, North Carolina. And by the way, they might stink this year. They might go 3-13. We shall see. But I'm a little obsessed about this crowd stuff. You know why, Steve? Because we haven't heard a damn thing from this organization. We haven't heard anything about it. People are waiting for a policy. Season ticket holders, suite holders, people that want to buy single game tickets, that want to welcome the Carolina Panthers to Tampa, and then give them the boot. We don't know what's going on. Other teams are announcing. The Saints have. Of course, the Raiders did it very quickly. I would be very surprised, and I'm going to repeat what I said the other day, Lee. I'd be very surprised if there was a total lockdown on fans at Ray J. Very surprised. What's the matter? Jacksonville can have fans and Tampa can't? Same governor. Now, having said that, Lee, there's a little organization called the Tampa Sports Authority. They got a lot of clout in this situation.
Yeah, they run the stadium.
They run the stadium. But they're going to take their cue from other things, government leaders, civic leaders,
bribes.
Health professionals.
Don't forget bribes.
So Lee, we got to know pretty soon, don't we, Lee? I mean, people have to plan what they're doing on September 20th. You're not going to announce something September 17th. And it's a big issue for Buck fans. They want to publicly support this football team with number 12 at the helm. They can't wait to get out there, even in a reduced capacity. People will understand. Okay, you want 18,000, you want 20,000, but it's something, and it's a lot better than zero. I just can't imagine looking out at Ray J on a beautiful Sunday afternoon in September, two teams on the field, nobody in the stands. I don't like it.
I'm split on this. I can easily see it, as an empty stadium. Raiders are empty. Saints are empty. So I
Washington's empty.
Yeah, the Redskins recently. Yeah. And until they get a name, they're still the Redskins. I don't give a damn what Goodell says.
And your Jets and Giants, I believe.
Well, I didn't know I owned a piece of them, but okay. Is it crappy for the fans? You damn right. I mean, it's terrible for the fans. You know, this arguably is the most excited I've ever seen Bucks fans, with the possible exception of the year Chucky came here and got him to a Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl. I've never seen Bucks fans as amped. Now, as far as your contention about making a difference, I long ago have gotten over that. I don't think a raucous crowd makes a difference. I've gotten over that. I can give you a couple examples. The first one is your Chiefs, Ira. They have an absolutely pathetic playoff record at home. Horrible. And what arguably is the best crowd, allegedly, in the NFL, Arrowhead Stadium. And that home playoff record they have is pathetic. So I don't buy this, the fans make a difference. You know, there's too much evidence out there that suggests it doesn't. Packers have had a pretty bad playoff record this century. Home record. They haven't done so well. And that's another atmosphere that's supposed to be so great. There's too much evidence that means it's neutral, maybe. See, I just feel awful for Bucks fans. Finally, after this lost decade, finally after the Mike Jenkins of the world and you name all these god-awful players, finally they got a team to be proud of, and they can't go to a game.
You're right, Lee. And Steve, you know, in terms of the myth of the home field advantage, we don't have to look beyond Raymond James Stadium. Well documented, since 2009, not one damn year with a winning record at home. Not one. That's kind of remarkable, Steve.
Sage, I don't want to confuse anybody. There have been no announcements made yet other than in New Orleans. And as of now, it seems everybody expects fans at Raymond James Stadium. I know Lee's talking about, maybe there are no fans at all, but even if they, you know, cut the fan total by 80%, that sucks for a lot of fans. I know there are fans out there now who are, you know, season ticket holders who are opting in and wondering, will I be able to get to go to two games, which games? They don't know yet, and it's a lot of uncertainty, and, you know, a lot of this will come down to the police, but I think, you know, their decision on crowd control and things like that and other ordinances. But the bottom line is Tampa's hosting that Super Bowl. And I think all the forces that be with the Super Bowl and all the revenue that represents, they're going to be pushing to at least not have an empty stadium on opening day, even if it's only 6,000 people and they decide to ramp it up from there as they go forward. You know, nobody wants an empty stadium, and that might be a stronger force in Tampa than anywhere else. Ira, opening day, you will be at Big Storm Brewery in Clearwater. I'm going to be out there with you. We are going to be welcoming fans to watch the game. It's going to be fantastic. I talked to Zach, your buddy, the guy who looks up to you like you're the king of all media. Former intern is going to be out there. He's going to be making sure nobody's coming within 6 feet of the Sage. He's going to be enforcing the no selfie rule. But we are so excited to be drinking Tropic Pressure, Florida Ale, the Bromosa, all the fantastic beers at Big Storm Brewing Company in Clearwater, just south of Ulmerton Road on 49th Street. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've got giveaways. They have a fantastic menu.
I was just there on Monday. Started the vacation there. My wife had the wings, dry rub, outstanding. And I went for the pulled pork tacos. I remembered that Lee talked about the smoker, that they do their own smoking, and so I wanted the pulled pork, and boy, were they good. and two tropic pressures to wash it down, gentlemen. They're doing a lot of building out there. That outdoor thing's going to be fantastic. Should be ready sort of in mid-September. Can't wait. A lot of stuff going on at Big Storm Brewery, gentlemen.
Absolutely, Ira. We're looking forward to it. You can find Big Storm beers near you. Go to BigStormBrewery.com. Punch in your zip code in the Storm Tracker. It's also at JoeBucksFan.com. So we've got the fan thing out of the way, Sage. Now let's get to the big thing, which is always the Brady thing, the Tom Brady thing. Now, Friday, the team is going to be able to practice offensive guys against defensive guys a little bit. Not in pads, but at least the receivers will be covered for a change. And Tom Brady is going to get to see a defense. He'll get to see some defense in 7-on-7 and a little 11-on-11 in underwear football. And Bruce Arians, interestingly, was asked about this, and he said, we're going to find out what Tom Brady doesn't know. That's what tomorrow's going to be about. We're going to see, he thinks he knows everything, and he's doing great. He's mentally sharp, but when it's a little bit of a defense, we'll see what he doesn't know, and we'll go from there. What do you make of that comment?
I think he's trying to goad the goat. Goad the goat, baby. I think Arians knows very well what the three of us know. There's never been anybody who plays the game at a higher mental level than Tom Brady. I think Joe Montana is pretty darn close. Maybe a Peyton Manning. But it's a short list. And, you know, Arians wants to see, what's Tom Brady going to do when, Todd Bowles throws a few wrinkles at him. You know what he's going to do? He's going to shred him. There's nobody in Brady's face. Lee, underwear football, it's a beautiful thing. And I don't think we're going to know much about Brady. I'm not sure how much we're going to know when the pads do come on. It's going to be so much of a country club atmosphere for 32 NFL teams. I think it's driving Arians up a wall because he knows the importance of game one. And, you know, you hear it, Lee, all the time. All 16 games count the same. Maybe. You got a chance to go into New Orleans and make a point to the three-time division champions in their house. I don't care whether there's fans or not. They're still the New Orleans Saints. And Arians isn't sure his team is going to be ready. Physically ready for this matchup. And we shall see. But, Steve, you also have to remember what Bruce Arians told us. Tom Brady's the last thing he's worried about for this football team. And it's well said, and it needs to be said. Brady is going to be just fine, Lee, if they can keep him upright. And in my mind, that's a considerable if.
Nice to know that you don't have to worry about quarterback for a change. Holy smokes. yeah, there's bigger fish to fry. To me, it's interesting that about a week or so ago, you know, Arians was saying, I have no rookie pencil in as a starter. They haven't shown me anything yet. They're behind. They're missing 400 snaps that they would have had if there was no OTAs. He was very down on the rookies. And today it seemed like he was actually ready to pencil in Winfield and Wirfs as starters. So his tune has changed quite a bit, even though Wirfs hasn't hit anybody, and I guess he's already a starter. And it sounds like the same as with Winfield. So what changed all of a sudden?
Steve, I thought he left himself a little wiggle room with Wirfs. In fact, I was a little bit surprised. I thought he was kind of going to declare Wirfs the starter in week one. I think he fell a little short of that, Steve. He mentioned Joe Haig and said he would be comfortable with him if Wirfs isn't ready. I think it would be quite disappointing for this organization, Jason Light in particular, Steve. If Wirfs doesn't line up at right tackle,
sure,
at the Superdome. But I thought he left some wiggle room there.
I'm leaning more in Lee's direction here. I'm glad he brought that up. It was only a week ago that Arians was very, I don't know about these rookies and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, today he said of Winfield and Wirfs, they're both showing us exactly what we thought they were, which is the quote. Well, obviously you drafted these guys to be starters. So that's great to hear. And he said they're smart players from great programs. And so it looks like they're on track. And that track, we know, is to start. So we'll see. But I agree with you, Ira. He did very quickly say, quote, if he's not ready, we'll play Joe, meaning Joe Haig. So, but I thought that was more coach speak. I liked what Lee mentioned. I think that's the more important part of this puzzle. But
right.
you know how this goes. If Wirfs looks lost and JPP's eating them up, you know, they might think
right.
twice. But
that's right.
I can't bag on the organization either if these guys don't start. I mean, who could have predicted what has happened? Nobody. You name the person. I can't bag on them if Wirfs and Winfield aren't starting in New Orleans because, you know, they literally had no offseason. So it's almost unexpected for a rookie to come in with, what, 6 weeks of practice, if that, and all of a sudden start right off the bat. That's it almost sounds like it's a really uphill swim or upstream swim.
You know, Steve, one more point about those two guys in particular and week one. You talk about a formidable challenge. Steve, you got Winfield going up against Breeze, who, like Brady, has seen every defense known to man. And Winfield is going to have his hands full. He might draw Michael Thomas on occasion. And it don't get any better than Michael Thomas. And as far as the young man out of Iowa, and I've said it many times on this show, he's got a heck of a player lurking outside his right shoulder in Cam Jordan, one of the top four defensive ends in football. Good luck, Mr. Wirfs.
Sure, this is a much tougher road for Winfield, in my opinion. It's probably obvious, but a much tougher road for him. The Bucks can evaluate Wirfs and play to what he does well, and they can also
right.
cover for him. Winfield,
right.
he's out there on the turf. Drew Brees and Sean Payton, they're likely going to be setting Wirfs up through the first half for plays they're going to run in the second half. Excuse me. Setting
Winfield
up.
Yeah, Winfield. Yep.
And so he's at their mercy, and we'll see. You know, he doesn't have to start. Andrew Adams, nobody remembers this. Andrew Adams was out there playing when the Bucs defense was doing better in the last half of the year. So, he is a capable safety. If you believe the defensive backfield improved significantly last year, it's not like he was getting beat left and right and we're blasting the Bucs for re-signing him. So they do have a body there.
Speaking of Sean Payton, in my conversation with Jaworski a couple of weeks ago, and it shouldn't surprise anybody. I mean, he's got quite a body of work. In his mind, Sean Payton is the offensive guru of the National Football League. Coaching an offense, constructing an offense, executing it. Nobody's better than Sean Payton. And I think it's hard to argue against that.
Now, listen.
And by the way, I got to give Jones credit because from what everything we're hearing, the guy's working his butt off. He is
sure.
working his butt off. He deserves credit for that. He deserves that.
There's some fantasy football guy, and I'm just going to be very polite here because I like Arians. I'm not going to call the guy what this guy referred to him as. But let's just say, and this guy provided evidence, so it's not baloney. Let's just say Arians likes to play misdirection with his running backs. You know what he talks about running backs?
Right.
It's misdirection, and evidently he's got a history of it. So given that information, do you believe that Ronald Jones is the number one back and that Shady McCoy is going to pick his nose on the bench? The guys that they drafted are going to be special teams fodder?
I believe, Ronald, I believe Jones will be the number one back for two reasons. One, he showed improvement last year. Undeniable.
Well, now, improvement from what?
Well, you're right. But as you know, he averaged more than 4 yards a carry, and he caught some balls and averaged 10 yards a catch, which is good for a running back. But equally as important, gentlemen, and we're always realistic on this podcast, we got to look at the competition. You got a third-round running back who missed some time in camp, a truncated camp to begin with, and is going to have a tough time impressing the coaches. You've got a seventh-round running back who might be able to help on special teams, and they do need some help in that return game. Don't they call him the human joystick? Well, let's go see if he can make the team joystick. And, you got Dare, and you got LeSean McCoy, who I think is, a role player at this stage of his career. So I don't see anybody breathing down Jones's neck, and if he gets off to a decent start, he'll keep the job.
Look, the pads will come on, and I'm sure they're all dying and drooling over there at $1 to see what Keyshawn Vaughn looks like. You know, I mean, it happens every year that a back just explodes onto the scene with fresh legs. And, you know, they just want to win games. But obviously Jones has a huge heads up here as the returning guy and knowing the system. One really fun thing that Anthony Becht, former Bucks tight end and played for a lot of teams, worked for the Buccaneers radio network. He said it was asked about Ronald Jones on radio this week, Ira. And Anthony Becht said, you know what? I love to see how Rojo worked on his game last year and improved. But all the offseason stuff from Rojo and listening to him talk, and yeah, it was great to see him running up hills in Arizona. But it seemed like all of Rojo's stuff was not about the playbook. And he said, really, that's what limits Ronald Jones is if he wants to be the back that he hopes to be, he's got to be just a master of the darn playbook and knowing every option on every situation, especially on third down. And that's what's going to get him the playing time. And he doesn't think Rojo has shown the mental capacity yet. And it takes guys some time, but not usually at running back. So you know, that's going to be a part of this.
As usual, guys, and you've been around them. Anthony Becht is a sharp guy. Anthony Becht knows what he's talking about. And I always remember Becht was part of Gruden's final teams in Tampa, not the Super Bowl team, but after that. And, you know, he was a role-playing tight end, a good blocker, a willing blocker, big body. You know what? I used to talk to him a lot when Becht was in that locker room because I want to talk to somebody that's articulate and that can tell me what the heck's going on with the football team. A lot of times it's an offensive lineman. Sometimes it's a tight end. John Gilmore was like that. And I see that John Gilmore is now doing a lot of stuff on the Buck radio network, and he's pretty darn good at it post-game. And I got a quick Becht story. Steve, you'll appreciate this one. You know, he's a big strapping guy, Becht. One time I came into the, I don't know, the media workroom after talking to him or something, and, you know, there was a bunch of people around me, and I said, that's a good-looking man. That's a good-looking man. I got to tell you, the looks I got from this Buck media corps, which, you know, is questionable to begin with, and back then it wasn't any better. They couldn't handle it, Steve. What did you say, Ira? What the heck did you say? So I repeated it. That's a good-looking man. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with tapping into your feminine side over here once in a while, the Kemper. Maybe I do it more than I should, but the facts are the facts, gentlemen. Some people are gargoyles, and some people are Anthony Becht, so... Nothing wrong with that, Isbeth. You call it like you see it.
Ira, there's so many ways I could go to the gutter with this.
I don't even know what to do.
Down the high road.
I don't even know where to go with that, Ira. I'm flummoxed. I'll tell you an even shorter and not nearly as comical Anthony Becht story. He worked at the Combine this year. He was sort of the assigned mentor from the league for all the tight ends. And I talked to him there. And he point blank told me, I didn't bring it up because it was all off the record, but he point blank told me what was going on and what the situation was with Jameis Winston and the Bucks, and who he had talked to, and it was 100% on the money. And so he's very well connected, really stays close to the team.
He is like Rondé Barber. He's well wired in the Buck organization. Lee, you know that.
Now, I don't know about this year because, you know, right. It's such everything's thrown into a tizzy. But on a normal training camp, you'd see him out there.
Absolutely.
And Sage, I didn't say it came from the Bucks. He just had the info, which is what counts. And Beck's a good guy. And you know, it's Ira. It's okay that you were a young, strapping 60-year-old man at the time, and you had a man crush on Anthony Becht. I can't wait to
Steve. I didn't say I admired him from a distance. And you know, there's nothing wrong with. Saying that, you know, Tom Cruise, a good-looking guy, Anthony Becht, nothing wrong with that, gentlemen. Nothing wrong with that.
As Lee eloquently said, there's so many directions to go, Ira. We're not going to go there. We're going to turn the page, Ira.
Hold on. Now, speaking of directions, Steve, I can't wait, and I know you're going to get around to this in your own good time, but make it sooner rather than later, maybe jump it ahead. You mentioned, unless my hearing's going at the age of 39, you mentioned that Jason Light might have made some public remarks, and I am all ears because I can't believe that Jason Light's come out of the shadows. What happened?
He did have a lot to say, Ira. He definitely did. There are a few key points to hit with you as Jason Light has emerged to be a national star again. He's pulling a page out of Mark Domenech, talking to the Nationals and leaving the locals to a twist, which I have no problem with him doing. No problem at all. But Ira, listen,
no problem.
There are a ton of people, Ira, they wake up in the morning or they come home from vacation or they're snowbirds or whatever. They get home from work and they see a bunch of water in their house. They know they got a leak. They got an issue. What do they do? What do they do? What are they supposed to do? What they should do is call Florida's Elite Restoration. They're available 24/7. They're going to respond to you within a couple hours at the very most if they don't pick up the call instantly and are able to help you. And you want to call them before you call your insurance company, because water leads to mold. Water damage is a problem. Floods happens all the time. And this is a professional licensed mold remediation company, local. We know them personally. And they're going to come out and assess everything at no charge. They'll come out with their thermal imaging cameras and figure out the water and the extent of the damage and what's going on. But this happens all the time, Ira, and people need to know. You see water, you found a leak, you don't know if it was there 6 hours, 42 hours. You got to call Florida's Elite Restoration.
Florida'sElitereStoration.com. That's your go-to website for any mold problems, and jump on it quick. Plus, when it comes to mold, a small problem can very quickly throw into a major renovation, which is accompanied by major expenses. Florida'sElitereStoration.com.
We've talked about Florida's Elite Restoration. They're our friends for a while. They handle all disasters, but you know what? You got to call them first. It doesn't cost anything, but they're going to give you the sound advice, the honest advice that really makes a huge difference when you have this crisis kind of situation. You see water, you reach out to Florida's Elite Restoration. All right, Ira, you want to talk Jason Light? We'll talk Jason Light. He got on to Colin Cowherd's show, Fox Sports Radio, and first thing he said, he talked about how practice has changed at One Buck. He said there's, quote, a different aura. Quote, there's just a different feel. It's very efficient. The players are gravitating to Brady like you would expect. And Light goes on to say that, you know, I was there for 6 years with Brady in New England, so this doesn't surprise me. But he goes on to say, quote, it's just a different feel. We're taking it one day at a time, but, you know, it's just different. What do you make of that, Ira?
Well, for people that are going to take that as a knock on Jameis Winston, I think that's a little simplistic. You could almost say no matter who the quarterback was in Tampa last year, when you bring in Tom Brady, Lee, it's going to be a different aura. Jameis Winston did a lot of good things. You like to call him the number one passer in the league last year. You and I got into that once. I've been letting you go on that. You're still saying it. I still think you're wrong, but I've been letting you say it.
5,000 yards is 5,000 yards.
I understand. What you need to say is you led the league in passing yards. That's what you need to say.
Yeah, then he has the number one passer. I'm not into passer ratings. Passer ratings is gibberish, mumbo-jumbo nonsense. Who was that guy? He was a Cal quarterback. He was at St. Louis for a while. Baltimore, he was one of those horrible quarterbacks that Brian Billick had.
Kyle Bowler?
Yes, when Kyle Bowler has a better quarterback rating than Roger Staubach, you could take that whole freaking measurement and just toss it out the window.
Jason Light's not telling us anything that Buck fans don't already know in terms of the players gravitating towards number 12.
Sure.
We all expected it. It was talked about a lot by Bruce Arians in terms of the intangibles that Brady brings to the job. It's not just, you know, getting the ball out of his hands in 1.8 seconds. It's not just reading defenses like nobody's business. It's the leadership quality, and it's been missing. Let's be honest, it's been missing. This team has not been overwhelmed with great leaders. It just hasn't. Some guys you would think that are going to be the leaders are quiet by nature. Well, Levante made some great strides last year in that regard, because I think Arians challenged him to be more vocal, and he was. But here comes Brady, and of course, Jason Light saw him in action in Foxborough. Didn't have to worship him from afar. And Jason Light is excited. There's no question about it. Look, he was a Jameis guy. You know, he signed off on Jameis Winston. He didn't want to dump Jameis Winston. You know, he's a smart man. And when Arians said he wanted door number two, he made it happen. So I say it again. There's every reason to believe Tom Brady is rejuvenated. He's got a new lease on life. He's having fun, guys, and I think that's showing every day. And that in itself, I think it's going to make a whale of a difference.
Ira, could you, you know, this aura that White speaks of with Brady and, you know, and your other mystic word, leadership. I'm more production than results. And we could talk about all this other black magic some other time. But could this aura that Light talks about, could it be summed up in one word besides aura? Respect?
Not a bad way to look at it, Lee.
I mean, the man has six rings.
The six rings speak before he ever gets into his first huddle as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. You know, it's all about your resume. But that's what it's about.
So, Ira, listen, Ira. Sage, Tom Brady, the players are listening to him. They bought in. There's a new aura. We all get it. We got it. Where their players are feeling it, it's working. Jason Light also said that his coaching staff deserves an A+. Absolutely. And three times in talking about his coaching staff, he said the word incredible. It was like Jameis Winston with the word amazing. Incredible, incredible, incredible. They get an A+, all-star staff. So they got an all-star staff. The players are buying in. They've got the aura. The Brady magic is working. And the talent is there. You know, we talked about this before, but is there any reason to excuse the team from even getting off to a slow start? Forget about the final record. If you go 3-5 or worse for the eighth year in a row, is there any excuse anywhere? I'm really focused on this, Ira, because I can't let anybody off the hook this season. Can't do it again.
Hey, I didn't want to do it last year. That is the flip side of having Brady and Gronkowski in town, Lee. That's the flip side. You've run out of excuses. You got absolutely nothing. As far as this A-plus coaching staff, well, they're A-plus in terms of quantity. Let's give them that one. They got the largest freaking staff this side of Notre Dame. However, this staff also oversaw a group that led the league in penalties. And to me, part of that is on coaching. 41 giveaways, league lead. Part of that is coaching. Offensive line play, mediocre. Part of that is coaching. Secondary, horrendous for about 8 or 9 games. Part of that, coaching. Special teams, dismal. So Lee, headed up. An A-plus coaching staff produced a 7-9 record last year. Without saying so, Jason Light might have just taken a shot at Jameis Winston.
I could tell they were better coached. I mean, to me, it was obvious. And the team got better.
Well, that's a low bar. That's a low bar.
That's like Ronald Jones. Oh, he improved last year. Yeah, from what? So I totally agree with you. Now, here's one for you, Ira. And it, ironically, it was the very same day that Light was talking to Cowherd. He referenced his coaching staff as A+. I'm not going to argue with the A+, but I just thought this was very ironic. The same day Light was telling Cowherd this, Albert Breer had a mailbag. Albert Breer, the NFL reporter for SI.com, he is so well plugged in. That guy is as plugged in as Lachlan Fora, as Peter King, you name it. Breer is plugged in. And someone asked him in his mailbag, who are some hot candidates? Who are some names we should look out for that would be high up the charts of potential head coaching candidates for next year? He had a list of 6 or 7 or 8 coaches. None from the Bucs coaching staff. Zero. So here's his A-plus staff, yet a guy that's plugged into the NFL inner workings, top coaches all the time, he doesn't have any Bucs coach high up the totem pole as far as a potential head coach in 2021.
Ira, let me let me read the list. I have it in front of me. Here's the list of 9 coaches that Albert Breer named as early hot names.
It's got to be led by Eric Bieniemy.
I'm going to read the names. Chief passing game coordinator, Chiefs passing game coordinator Mike Kafka, Titans offensive coordinator Arthur Smith, Raheem Morris, Falcons DC, Saints defensive coordinator Dennis Allen. He and Morris, of course, are former head coaches. 49ers DC, Robert, I forgot how to pronounce his name, Saleh. He is a very hot candidate from what I've heard and been reading in other places. Ravens coordinator Greg Roman, who's been an interim coach. Eric Bieniemy, as you mentioned, Ira, from the Chiefs, and Josh McDaniels. No Todd Bowles, no Byron Leftwich.
Who's that safeties coach you're always bringing up, Stevie?
Nick Rapone.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Nick Rapone, he fell a little short, a little short. Look, I agree with the first thing Lee said, and it's an important point. I saw better coaching last year. I did, because I saw players develop. I saw players develop as the season went on. That's a telltale sign. Those young cornerbacks, they didn't finish the season the way they started it. You got to give credit, not just to Bowles. Kevin Ross deserves his props. That's what you want, player development, because the three of us have been screaming about it for this franchise. We haven't seen it. Where is it? And, you know, now we start to see it a little bit. Kappa got a little better as the season went on. Ronald Jones got better. Godwin got better.
Linebackers?
I think Lee's first point is right and fair. They took a step up in terms of the coaching staff. Now, I don't know about A-plus, but they took a step up.
All right, Ira, let's remind everybody your podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com. That's where you start shopping. It's just that simple. C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Ira, now, one thing that was kind of neat, and we don't have to talk about it, but it's just worth referencing because it does speak to the Brady change. Joe Montana did a little hit with USA Today Sports, and he revealed that Brady told him, quote, "You know, they ask my advice," meaning in New England, "they ask my advice, I tell them, and then they don't take it." And Montana basically said, yeah, Brady was a little frustrated, and he's confident the Bucks will listen to him. And I think that probably says a lot, but that could turn on a dime if the Bucks don't listen to Brady or there's some disagreement in week one, which is going to be such a high-pressure game against such a good team. You know, I hope that they get through that, even if they lose, that they get through that with some offensive efficiency just to keep everybody's confidence, because Brady's still human. He's got to feel like everything's moving in the right direction. And I believe, anyway, the Buccaneers team confidence is a little bit thin, you know, as far maybe fragile is a better word. I just hope that everybody gets on the same page. But Montana seems to think Brady really wants to be listened to.
You know, Lee, this has been a common theme on the podcast since mid-March. It really has. A lot of fans will weigh in on this topic about the Buck offensive playbook. What's it going to look like? Is it going to be very similar to last year? Are they going to make a lot of changes because of the change under center? I think it's going to be ending up being a non-issue, Lee. I don't see it as very compelling because, you know, I keep going back to one point, guys. Tom Brady was not forced on Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians was the driving force. He was the driving force in acquiring Tom Brady. And you don't do that unless you're willing to be flexible and only a fool. And, yeah, I'm talking about you, Josh McDaniels, if that story with Montana is true. And I think it is. At least it's true in Brady's mind, and that's all that counts, how Brady felt about the situation in New England. That's what's important. And Arians would be a fool, and he's not, to impose his own will and say we're going to do things my way. Come on, Bruce Arians isn't going to do that, Lee. Tom Brady is going to be a collaborator. It's not going to be Brady's way or the highway, and I don't think Brady would demand that. He just wants some input, Lee. And apparently, he didn't feel he had any in New England. I think it's going to be a case of fresh air for Brady because, in speaking of Bruce Arians, he's not talking to a wall. And I think he respects Arians' judgment, and certainly vice versa.
I'm really surprised about that. First off, Belichick, for all the reasons that people don't like the guy, he seems extremely open-minded when it comes to X's and O's of football. He seems very open-minded. I mean, he's a big stats guy, even though he can't stand pro football frauds. Right. He's a big stats guy. He's actually attended practices at Dartmouth when we talked about them previously, that they don't hit at practice, and yet they turn their program around by not hitting. He's very open-minded. Belichick's like a walking encyclopedia when it comes to football. And I've read stories where he's brought high school coaches. There's some high school coach, I believe in Texas, that will not punt. It doesn't matter the down and distance. He will not punt. He's a math teacher, and he said, you know, you're wasting a down. You don't punt. And Belichick's actually brought the guy in and interviewed him and talked to him and tapped his brain, you know. So,
I think he's talking more. He might be talking more about the offensive coordinator.
Well, if that's the case, I believe that, because I think I am not a Josh McDaniels guy. I think the guy's a fraud. He must get so many sports writers hammered at the combine every year on Bob Kraft's dime that these guys are going to always write about him. That, you know, he's the next Bill Walsh or something. I think the guy's a fraud. I think he's a skunk. Remember, he's the one that pushed Tim Tebow on the Broncos. LOL.
You might have something there, Lee. You might have something there. With
him. By the way, he always gets mentioned for a job, and only up until recently, Raheem Morris is, you know, mentioned. Now, if I remember right, Morris and McDaniels were both hired at the same time their respective teams, the Broncos and the Bucks. McDaniels never had a winning record. Raheem won 10 games, and that roster he won 10 games with, I don't know how he did it. I really don't know how he did it. And everybody, oh, you know, they just wax poetic about, Josh McDaniels this and Josh McDaniels that. Well, Raheem did more than Josh McDaniels did. But he, up until recently, he was never considered another candidate. Never. And I think Raheem deserves it. I really do. More so than McDaniels, yeah, certainly.
I'm with you. And don't forget the litany of Belichick assistants that have gone on to be head coaches. Not overly successful, Steve. Not overly successful.
All right, Ira, I hear you. I hear you. A lot of ways to look at that. And, you know, obviously Mike Vrabel did well last year, so maybe that's changing a little bit. But Sage...
It doesn't mean they have to take every Tom Brady suggestion.
No, of course not.
It doesn't mean that.
Ira, you might be right about McDaniels. The reason why I say that, did you ever see the two-part biography of Belichick on the NFL Network that was released about four or five years ago?
I believe I did, yes.
Do you remember the part where Brady came in and said, and they were talking about developing a game plan, and I can't remember the specifics, but whatever he told Belichick, you know, that's a good idea, and he started writing it down. So it's at least that little clip showed that Belichick is willing to listen to Brady.
All right, Ira, Ronald Jones spoke, and he said, really detailed, how he's still learning how to catch the ball properly. He talked about coaches telling him that he wasn't absorbing the ball. He was just letting it hit his body, meaning he wasn't catching with his hands properly, and that he worked this summer on extending his hands and finding the tip of the ball and learning how to not slap it and look upfield and just to secure it. Real basic kind of stuff. And I got thinking about that, and you start to wonder, gosh, you know, the Bucks had to know this coming out of USC, and he's had two different coaches when it comes to running backs coaches, and he's still learning. It seems almost a little hard to believe. I mean, he doesn't have a lot. I'm not going to say, well, that's the wrong way to look at it. It just, to me, I seemed a little surprised. I felt a little surprised that, not that he was working on his fundamentals, but just that he felt like he really was coming so far.
You know, part of the problem, Steve, in that regard, is that those years at Southern Cal, while he was very productive as a running back and ripped off a lot of 50, 60-yard runs that really got the Bucks' attention on tape, and that's why they envisioned him as a change of pace to Peyton Barber, who's more of a plotter. But see, the years playing at the Coliseum, he never caught the ball. See, I don't remember how many catches he ended up in his college career, but it might have been on two hands. I mean, it might have been like 10, 15 catches. That was a big knock on Ronald Jones coming out. If I remember, he was a second-round pick, and I think had he been a more accomplished receiver as a prospect, he might have been a first-round pick. He had some eye-popping numbers at Southern Cal. He was a big play running back. And as Lee is about to point out, 1.9 yards a carry doesn't qualify as big play, right, Lee? Does not. But it's part of the reason that goes to what Steve's point is, that he's still kind of working on the fundamentals of catching balls out of the backfield, which is a little harder than it looks, Lee, because in the back of your mind, let's be honest, you know a linebacker's bearing down on you. That's just the way it is for a lot of the catches that you're going to make. And, you know, your back is to the defense, and you don't know how close the defender is to you. And here's a guy who's not used to catching balls. So it's sort of starting from scratch in that regard.
Well, Ira, let me throw this past you, because just because you don't catch a lot of balls in a college game, it doesn't mean you don't learn the fundamentals.
And true.
So, you know, you're still learning, getting coached. You're going through it in practice. It just seems, you know, I could see if he's not good at it. In some ways, this maybe is encouraging, because if he's still working on fundamentals, then he's got a lot of room to get better versus just a guy who's not very good at it. I don't know. It was an interesting nuance. It's just like a guy who fields ground balls. I mean, you know how to field the ground ball. It's a basic fundamental part of baseball, and it would be the same thing here, catching the ball out of the backfield. But it's just something we have to watch. But he said he's you know, learning how to catch, and Brady's been tutoring him.
Well, he's going to get some opportunities, Lee. He's going to be a first and second down back, I think, minimally, at least at the beginning of the season, so they know what they got in Vaughn. They're not going to overuse McCoy, I don't think. So he's going to get every chance, and I think he's learning on the go. But, Lee, we got to acknowledge he made a lot of strides last year catching the ball. Maybe not up to Brady's specifications, because Brady is the master at the safety valve, at the screen. He knows when to release the ball. He knows where to put it. Lee, if you throw a screen behind the running back, you know, off kilter, you're going to get that guy killed. You're going to get that
not
guy
just done. That. You get it returned, pick six.
Yeah, Brady doesn't do that. And I don't think that was a forte of Jameis's. I don't.
Well, you know, let's not have selective memories here. Brady did throw a pick six in one of his last passes with the Patriots, did he not?
Yeah, he did.
Real quick about Ronald Jones, Ira. Now, could it be, and I'm just throwing this out there, I don't know this, although there's some evidence to suggest yes, could it be that Dirk Cutter and his staff saw nothing from Jones early on, and they said, to hell with it, we got a win or we're fired, and maybe you could say they panicked and they just threw in the towel on him, so therefore his rookie season was a wash?
They did a terrible job of developing Ronald Jones. They did.
What job? They did none, I think.
Yeah, they gave up on him. They gave up on him, no question about it. And Arians seems the opposite. He seems more than willing to give Jones every chance to succeed. And as a player, Steve, that's all you could ask for. By the way, Steve, check me on this, but every time you ask Arians about the third receiver, the fourth receiver, who's the guy that he keeps talking up? Is it Scotty Miller, or is it the other guy?
He was asked about the battle for the third receiver, and he pretty much went right to Justin Watson, looking really, really good, is, I believe, what he said. He said that Watson clocked 21 miles an hour on their tracking devices. Now, for those who don't pay attention to some of that data that's out there, that's DeSean Jackson territory, 21 miles an hour on the field. He said Watson lost about 10 pounds, and he wasn't a fat guy by any stretch of the imagination. That probably pulls him now to like 6'2½", 205, and Arians seemed very pumped up about him. So before a real practice, before they play against defense, it looks like Justin Watson is the lead dog. And, of course, unfortunately, we learned Tyler Johnson, the rookie, remains injured, and Arians said he wasn't going into detail on the injury.
You know, I don't think that's the first time he's talked up Justin Watson. I think he likes that guy, Lee. He likes his size. He likes the way he's developing. He made some plays last year. I think Arians got a little special spot for that guy.
I think so, too, because you can make an argument that that's why Justin Watson was not cut last year. He had an awful training camp. He was dropping everything right and left. And I can't remember what Arians was talking about, but there was some play that he goofed up, and Arians chewed him out and said, you're the smartest guy on this team. How can you do that? How can you not know this? And so I think he likes him, but he's been disappointed in him. And look, Scotty Miller, who basically did nothing, jumped over Justin Watson on the depth chart last year. So I think Arians does have a soft spot in his heart for Justin Watson and probably has given him an extra chance or two to demonstrate that, hey, I'm giving you some faith. Don't make me look like a fool here.
Final quarter of the season, Ira, Justin Watson caught 14 passes, 2 touchdowns. You extrapolate that over 16 games, that's a high-quality receiver right there. So they're excited, but, you know, it's early, Sage. We're going to get out of here on this podcast because we need to rest up for training camp, and you need to call Anthony Becht. Maybe we'll play a little music for you. You know, maybe you guys can share a mimosa or a bromosa kind of thing.
And by the way, guys, starting next week, I think we get Arians every day. Every day, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Every day.
It should be fun. Unfortunately, it's not in person, but, you know, we all have to deal with that. And, Sage, I'll send you out on this note. Now, it's not a down note, but it's just a reality note because it's just something that's out there on a lot of people's mind, even though they get into sports to forget about it. Arians talked to his hometown paper, Sage, the York Daily Record, which I think Roy Cummings is working there now. And he revealed that he's really taking a calculated risk with his health. His wife had double pneumonia recently, or last year, I believe he said, and that he implied that maybe she's still recovering or had some little damage from that, even though she's fine. And he acknowledged his high blood pressure, and we all know his age. But he basically said, in short, he said, no risk it, no biscuit, that he's come too far. He wants to coach. He's more fired up to coach than ever. He feels better than he has in years, and he's going for it. And I think that sort of reflects the way a lot of people are in the country at this point is, you know, I feel good. We're prepared. We're going for it.
You know, Steve, along those lines, and I think about Bruce Arians and Tom Moore. I think about those two. A lot of people are focused on the players, and naturally. I mean, you know, they're the ones that are out there on Sundays that everybody focuses on. But I don't know, Lee, maybe because of my age, I tend to think about Tom Moore and Bruce Arians at one buck place every day. Yeah, there's protocols in place. Yeah, there's 66 pages of protocols. I understand that. But, you know, this virus is no insignificant opponent. In some cases, the virus is winning, you know, nationally. And,
is it?
You know, Bruce Arians, you know, he's got heart issues and some other thing. I think a cancer survivor. And Tom Moore with his age. And we know the numbers about, you know, people over 80. You know, Tom Moore's over 80, and we know the statistics about people in that age group getting COVID, how much more severe responses are. You know, you got to wonder that when Bruce Arians, you know, talks to his wife, she's got to be worried about him, and he's worried about bringing something to her. It's a hell of a thing, Lee, that's going on. We never thought we'd see something like this in our lifetime. And no, I was not around during the pandemic of 1918. I was not. Now, I just saw the movie 1917, but I wasn't around for 1918. We all, I think, have to say a little bit of a prayer for Coach Arians and Coach Moore for the risk that they're taking. Their love of the game, the passion that they're showing towards this organization. Let's wish them a healthy and safe season.
Ira, I got to ask you this, Ira. Now you brought it up. I thought this was wild. Now, you know the Big Ten called off fall football. And they're going to try to play it in the spring. I doubt that. Me, I'm morally outraged by it. I am just beside myself. You know, they're worried about the health of the players. They'll be the healthiest students on campus. They'll be getting tested every day. And I am just beside myself about this. And the domino effect that will cost taxpayers and shut down businesses for mom and pop shops all down the line. I mean, I'm just nuts about this. Well, Lou Holtz was equally outraged. And he likened it to, I hope I'm quoting him directly. He said, when our boys were in World War II and they stormed Normandy, they knew they were going to be casualties. They did it anyway. They knew they were going to be casualties. They did it anyway.
Come on, Lou. Come on, Lou. You've been sipping at that Kool-Aid too much now. Come on. Look, I have a lot of respect for everyone in the Buck organization that's showing up there every day, but especially those two codgers. And you know, I'm a codger myself. and I'm going to find somebody at one Buck place that I can say that's a handsome man. That's a handsome man.
Ira, get out of here. Good luck on Tuesday with the Hall of Fame senior voting committee there. I'm sure you will do a fantastic job, and we will see you on the next podcast. And of course, Ira will be out at Big Storm Brewing Company, Clearwater, opening day. Bucks game on the tube, lots of games on the tube, a lot of social distancing indoors. Sage is going to have his own table, but there will be no high fives. Ira, and it's a good thing for our listeners, Ira, you will not be making the rounds and pulling tater tots systematically off people's plates and other snack foods.
I'm good at it, Steve. I'm good at it. I'm sneaky.
You're very sneaky. Oh, hey, great to see you. Great to see you. You having one of those, can I have one of those jalapeno poppers over there? So that won't be happening, but we're going to have a good time. Get out of here, Ira.